Welcome to the podcast. I'm Chris Graham. We're going to talk UVA basketball in depth now that we have a good feel for what the 2021-2022 Virginia roster will be. We at least think that's pretty final at this stage. With the news in the last few days of two major transfer decisions that have really shaken up in a good way the Virginia roster for next year. The first news was last Thursday, Armand Franklin, former Indiana guard, transferring to UVA, announcing his transfer intentions to UVA. And then last night, Monday night, we're recording this on Tuesday, Jaden Gardner, the East Carolina forward, announcing. So we'll talk about those two guys in depth. Then we'll talk more about how the roster may shake out for next year. So first, let's talk about Armand Franklin. He's the news from last week, but let's go ahead and talk about him first, just because he was the first guy, I guess. Franklin is a guy, you think about the players Virginia lost in the transfer portal. And of course, and then let's throw in the guys that they're going to lose to graduation decisions to ineligibility, because graduation in this pandemic year doesn't mean anything. Everybody's getting an extra year if they want it. Virginia will lose Jay Huff and Sam Hauser. Both have made it clear they're going to seek pro opportunities. And for good reason. They're both 5-year college guys. At some point, you stay any longer in college, you need to be a doctor. But they're moving on, and we don't know about Trey Murphy III. We'll talk more about Trey Murphy as we talk about roster for next year, but there is possibility that he could at least test the NBA draft waters. Wouldn't be surprised based on what I'm seeing from the various mock drafts I'm consulting. Some don't have him on the mock draft. Some have him high in the second round. So there's movement there, right? But So you lose those guys. Plus, in the transfer portal, Virginia lost Justin McCoy, the forward. We'll talk about where he ends up. We'll kind of break that down, too. Also, Casey Morsell and Jabri Abdur-Rahim, all in the last couple of days, announcing where they're going to head off to. And we'll break that down as well when we talk in this podcast. But so you lose those five guys, maybe a sixth guy, if you lose Trey Murphy III. And so as of last Thursday around 8 o'clock – at PM, that is, Eastern time, there was despair in Wahoo Nation. And I've shared it. You know, you look at the roster for next year, there's nothing. I mean, I say nothing. There's guys, but it's incomplete, to say the least, right? And not because of the guys in the transfer portal. You know, that's the guys in the transfer portal, I think, you know, as we'll break that down a little bit later. You know, we didn't expect great contributions from those guys. Role players, maybe Jabri Abdur-Rahim could develop eventually into a star player. We just didn't see it last year. It's more that you lose so much from Sam Hauser and Jay Huff and perhaps Trey Murphy. Your three leading scorers from last year, certainly you know that your two leading scorers from last year are going to be heading off to greener pastures. So you needed some scoring punch. There was no scoring punch left on the roster. And that's taken care of. We'll talk about Armand Franklin first. Franklin. He was Indiana's second leading scorer in 2020-2021. He averaged 11.4 points a game, shot 42.9% from the field, 42.4% from three-point range, playing 30 minutes a game. So, I mean, those are all good numbers. The 42.4% from three, particularly, when you consider he's essentially replacing from a roster position Casey Morsell, who did not shoot 42% from three. Casey's a struggle with a shot in 2 years. What were his numbers? He shot 37% on 2 and 3-point jumpers. That's the numbers for Justin McCoy, which we'll talk about later. Yeah, he was a 26% shooter from three. Was Casey? So I mean, you're getting an authentic 3-point shooter, and Armand Franklin, a guy who can contribute. When you break it down, the scouting report, Synergy Sports, one of the deep dive analytics sites that I use and consult with for information about Virginia players, other teams' players when we break down games. Synergy ranks Franklin excellent coming off screens. 15 of 21 shooting, 71.4%, 1.480 points per possession coming off screens. The Virginia offense is a screen-based offense, the mover-blocker offense. You have two forwards who set screens, and everything kind of comes off that action. Either, the lane cuts, the curls, the flat cuts, it's all off screens for both the guards and the forwards. And so having a guy that's excellent coming off screens, that's not bad if you're Virginia. Very good on spot-ups. He shot 42.9% on spot-ups last season. And and on dribble handoffs, 47.1% on dribble handoffs. His average pick and roll ball handler, he's going to be a two or a three in the Virginia offense, depending on who else is on the floor with him. He's not going to be a one. There's Virginia has two point guards in Reese Beekman and Kihei Clark. So Franklin, what he will be asked to do coming off screens, the numbers are reminiscent of Kyle Guy, to be honest. His shot profile, according to hoopmath.com, 31.5% of his shots were at the rim, in line with Morsell. 30.2% of his shots were at the rim. And it's actually higher than Trey Murphy, a 6'9 forward. Only 24.1% of Murphy's shots were at the rim. So actually, Franklin at 6'4 gets to the rim more than the bigger guy, Murphy. And 72.4% of his shots were at the rim or threes, which is a number you want to see for a gifted spot-up shooter, more in line with that of Murphy. Murphy, actually, 86.9%. He just shoots a lot of threes, as you can see there. A lot of his shots for threes. And defensively, Franklin will fit in well. He's rated good per synergy, and this is on a team in Indiana that, went 12 and 15, got their coach fired. He rates good and allowed opponents 0.822 points per possession last season. That would rank him, I mean, he would be in the same range with UVA's guards. Now, Reese Beekman is a level above everybody. But he would rank in there with Thomas Woldentensley, another guy Virginia loses this year, Murphy and Clark. And that's actually on a team with much different defensive profile than Virginia in terms of their overall numbers. So you have to imagine that once you plug him into Virginia's system, that those numbers would improve even more. And Morsell, interestingly, for a guy who had a reputation as a defensive stopper, allowed 0.948 points per possession, so much higher than Franklin. So I mean, Franklin, if again, I'm looking at this and I think it's the way to look at it, Armand Franklin and Casey Morsell Morsell is transferring and now Franklin's taking a spot. That's the way this is happening. You have a much better offensive player. You have a much better defensive player. We'll go into how he fits in later, because we're going to break that down when we talk about, now we'll talk about Jaden Gardner. Gardner, I guess you have to say, if you're looking at this, I mean, Justin McCoy transfers out. He would have been Virginia's probably best returning big. I mean, not probably, he would have been Virginia's best returning big as a four or a five, because the other two guys, Caden Shedrick has potential, but he's been injured and hasn't been able to develop yet in his first 2 years at Virginia. Francisco Cafaro has not been injured. He just hasn't developed. Those would be the other two returning guys in the post. And so McCoy would have been the featured post. I mean, he would have had to have been. You get Jaden Gardner. Jaden Gardner is a different level. The Jaden Gardner gives Virginia its first post threat, actual back-to-the-basket post threat since Anthony Gill. And honestly, I think it really dates back. I mean, he's going to be the best big that I can remember in Virginia basketball since Junior Burrow. This guy's, he's 6'7 or 6'8. You can find different numbers in whichever website you refer to, but 240 pounds, big guy. You see pictures of him, you see videos of him, big, strong young man, plays in the post. He shot six three-pointers all last season. Virginia's knock last year was that their best three scorers, 6'8 Sam Hauser, 6'9 Trey Murphy, and 7'1 Jay Huff, were better from the perimeter. And so when you needed a basket, you needed somebody to get to the foul line, you just didn't have it. Virginia averaged 11.5 trips to the foul line per game last year, 11.5 free throws, excuse me, not trips, but free throw attempts per game. Gardner himself averaged 7 per game last year. That will change Virginia dramatically. This will feel more like those Anthony Gill, Malcolm Brogdon teams. He averaged 18.3 points, 8.3 rebounds per game at East Carolina last year, shot 47.9% from the field. And he's a guy, I was saying this to a friend when I was on the phone last night. He sprung fully formed from the foam. He's averaged 18 points, 8.7 rebounds per game over 3 seasons at ECU. He'll still have 2 years of eligibility because of that 1 year grace. He has another junior and then a senior season at UVA if he chooses to use 2 seasons. And he's been a force since his freshman year at ECU. And and don't knock ECU if you're a UVA listener out there saying, where does ECU play? They play in the American Athletic Conference. Houston was a champion of that conference. Houston made the Final Four this year. He had 21 points and 15 rebounds against Houston this season. And so, I mean, it's a good basketball conference. It's not a Power Five, but it's not, it's the next tier. And I mean, obviously you sent one of your members of the Final Four. It's a good conference. Gardner, when you break him down, he's a force in the post. Excellent rating from Synergy Sports on post-ups, 1.013 points per possession on post-ups. And 21% of his possessions last season were post-ups. And so, you know, you're talking about a guy that, you know, he plays in the post. Very good in transition. Virginia doesn't run much, but he's a force when Virginia does run. He'll be, and he's also good on offensive rebounds. You'd expect a guy like that. He's laser focused. I said this in a column, laser focused on working the paint. More than 2/3 of his shots, 67.3% were post-ups or shots at the rim in 2020, 2021. Virginia is not going to be sort of hollow like it felt last year. You know, you're not going to rely on Kihei Clark to get to the rim for this team, or Reese Beekman to get to the rim for this team. You're going to have a guy you can work it. And I mentioned, you know, Franklin running off screens when I talked about the Virginia mover blocker offense. It works with the two bigs starting the offense by setting screens, and then the guards cut off those screens, and then either, you know, the flat or the curl. And then depending on what the defense does, the big can pick and pop or pick and roll. You think back to the Anthony Gill years, there was a lot of offense that ran when after the screen was set and kind of cleared that side of the floor, Gill would get the ball, you know, 10 feet in and face up and use his dribble drive ability within close range to do some damage, or he would, you know, drop step or those kind of things. And this, and you know, when you talk about Gardner, he kind of reminds me of Gill, who's now transformed himself into a 3-point shooter as a pro overseas and now in the NBA. Gardner could, you know, when you look at his shot profile, he could eventually develop into a 3-point shooter. I don't think Virginia wants to see it. They'd rather see him focus on the post, but he rates good by Synergy on spot up jumpers. He shot 50% on spot ups last year. Now his range right now is about 17 feet. That's sort of the outer limits of his range when you look at his his deep numbers on Synergy. But you know, you're not asking him to shoot anything really outside of 17 feet. He's not going to be a stretch four, or a stretch five, as the case may be, because we had Jay Huff doing that this year for Virginia, and he was overall respectable 41.5% on 2-point jumpers. That's actually in the range of what Huff did this past season. So I think what that tells you is he's a guy who can hit the jump shot. He can pick and pop. He's just not going to extend it maybe as far out, but he's going to be tough in the post. And I mentioned Franklin played 30.1 minutes per game last year. Gardner averaged 35.1 minutes a game last year. Those guys are horses. They can carry some minutes for you. And so now let's talk about the roster for next year, the roster and rotation more even than the roster. I mentioned Trey Murphy III, and you know, assuming he comes back, and I'm going to assume he comes back, but I'm also going to assume he's going to test the NBA draft waters. And I think what he'll hear is he might hear back from that the analysis that he could project as a mid to late second round pick, and that's why I think he'll end up coming back. I don't know that we'll see him projected as a late first round pick. That's when you would say you got to go. That's guaranteed money. It's 5 years of money. That changes your life. Second round picks, you know, I mean, I was asked this question by my wife. We have the NBA League Pass, and we were watching Oklahoma City play the other night, the night that Ty Jerome had 23 points in that game against Cleveland. And she asked me to look up his salary, and I'm just kind of doing this from memory, so it's not exact, but I want to say his salary this year is $2.7 million. We're like, whoa, well, what's DeAndre Hunter making? DeAndre Hunter, another first-round pick from that 2019 class, and DeAndre is making somewhere in the range of $7 to $7.5 million as a number four pick. And what's Kyle Guy making? Well, Kyle was a second-round pick. Kyle was making a league minimum, $449,000. So, I mean, you know, that's money that, yes, you would say, give me $449,000 to play basketball, but it's a 1 year contract. I mean, it's basically whereas the first round contracts are 5 years, you're living year to year as a second round pick. And if you don't get another job next year, you're either playing overseas or you're coaching, and you're not making $449,000 anymore. If you're Trey Murphy III and you're told you're a mid second round pick, you can say to yourself, that might be as good as it gets for me. Maybe I should take it and go now. In worst case, I go play in Europe and make a little bit less than that, but still get to play basketball and get paid for it. Or if you're Trey Murphy III and you say, okay, that's the floor for me. That's not the ceiling. That's the floor. And I can go back to Virginia for maybe a year, maybe 2 years, but maybe just a year. Get a little stronger, work under Mike Curtis, and then build my game a little bit more. Work on that one criticism that I get, which is that I'm kind of soft. Play, because he would play the four or five for this team next year, and I'll break that down in a second. That's why I'm presuming he's coming back. That's a long explanation as to now prefacing what this rotation might look like next year. Here's likely your I'm not projecting starters right yet, kind of just looking at your guys who are in the mix to be rotation guys. Kia Clark, Reese Beekman, obviously. I think you give the keys to the offense to Reese Beekman and you know, make Kia Clark sort of a two guard, but you know, I know that's hard to do because Kia's 5'9" and he's not a great shooter from outside. He's a good shooter, but not a great shooter. But to me, the team just seems to run better when Reese is running it. But that's me. I mean, so you got Kia and Reese are two of your rotation guys. Obviously, Armon Franklin is a rotation guy. I think you go ahead and slot him in and start him at two or three. And other rotation guys in the backcourt include Cody Statman, Casey McCorkle, incoming recruit Tane Murray. Let's just throw him in the mix. We, you know, until they get to grounds, we don't know what we have. But that's six guys in the backcourt: Clark, Beekman, Franklin, Statman, McCorkle, and Murray. Tony Bennett tends to go with an eight-man rotation, five in the backcourt, three in the frontcourt. So I got six guys for five slots there, and we'll figure out, you know, the cut line maybe as we're getting through this. And then in the post, you've got four guys, and I'm putting Murphy as a stretch four in this. He played a lot of three last year, if you want to call it three. Heck, him and Murphy were basically both threes, and sometimes you saw Reese Beekman as a blocker in the offense, certainly down the stretch. But I'm going to put Murphy as a four and a five, Gardner as a four and five, and then Kafaro Shedrick. And those are four guys for three slots. I think if you're looking at the cut line right now, let's just say the cut line is either McCorkle or Murray in the backcourt, between, you know, who's sort of five and six. And then in the front court, it's Kafaro Shedrick. I think it's probably Kafaro, who's probably the fourth guy in a three-man rotation. But that's – all of a sudden, you go from, you know, last week, as of last Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, who are we going to get to score the ball for us? To now you have this reminds me of, you know, I say Junior Burrow as the Gardner. Junior and Corey, maybe from the 90s teams, maybe even though they weren't successful, Curtis Staples and Norman Nolan, reminiscent. You have a big and a three-point shooter. And then Joe Harris and Anthony Gill from the most recent vintage UVA. I mean, this is that you have a 18-point scorer in the post. You have a 43% shooter from the perimeter. And then you got, in my opinion, Beekman, and then you got Murphy, who's an NBA prospect, certainly a top NBA prospect off this team, that can fill it in from different spots. And then, you know, Beekman plays great defense for you. You know, Clark, obviously, we know can play great on-ball defense. The one thing you'll be missing, certainly, is Jay Huff's shot-blocking ability, but what you lose maybe there, you maybe gain in toughness. And no knock on Jay Huff. I mean, he blocked. I think he ended up second in all-time blocks at UVA. Of course, first is so far out there, Ralph Sampson, that no one will ever catch Ralph, right? But you know, you had Jay to clean up messes, certainly, behind guys. But the pack line defense doesn't all, you know, you don't necessarily need an imposing guy blocking shots. It's designed to work more on the perimeter, taking away the pick and roll and taking away the post to post doubles, taking away the dominant post guy. And so it's more predicated upon just, you know, forcing late shot clock bad shots than it is necessarily gambling and then needing a guy to erase problems from behind. So if the fact that you'd be essentially replacing Huff with Gardner, a 7-1 shot blocker with a 6'7", 6'8" position guy rebounder, I don't think that's going to be a problem for Virginia defensively. And then, I mean, my ideal, what I would call my death lineup here, using the Golden State Warriors lingo, my death lineup would be Beekman, Franklin, Beekman, Franklin, Murphy, Gardner, and gosh, who would I go with the fifth? I guess Clark at this stage would be my fifth. in a death lineup, but you know, you could go Statman with 6'7" with size, Murray 6'5" with size, in the backcourt, along with Beekman, and not go wrong. There's some good mixes there. There's some good lineup mixes there. So I think what we're getting out of this is this is a formidable team. I really look at this roster and this rotation and say that you know, this Virginia team has the potential to be an improvement upon last year's team. And that team, of course, won the ACC regular season championship, you know, spent the entire season ranked in the polls, started number 4 in the country, ended up, you know, at one point was number 7, had a 3-game losing streak, still came back and won the ACC after that losing streak. I think that this team has the potential to be better than that team. And, you know, I look around the ACC and, you know, North Carolina in a bit of turmoil, you know, losing some guys, new coach Hubert Davis, the recruiting for next year, I don't see a point guard on that UNC roster that really jumps out at me. Duke in a similar way, you know, Duke is lacking at point guard, a couple 5-stars coming in, but, you know, no one and done type talents. And they're coming off of a 500 season that didn't get them a NCAA tournament bid. Florida State's losing some guys in the NBA. I look at Virginia kind of standing right now, again, atop the ACC going into preseason. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them again picked to win the ACC and be I'm guaranteeing top 10 team nationally preseason and maybe top 5, with these two transfers, with Franklin and with Gardner coming in. Now I wanted to address, you know, I wrote this before the Franklin news, and now that the Franklin news is out there, I don't know that Virginia fans care as much anymore that Virginia lost two players to other ACC schools. You know, the ACC just this year rescinding that ban on intra-conference transfers. Justin McCoy headed to North Carolina, Casey Morsell to NC State. And there was some consternation, you know, as that news popped out, as those individual news bits popped out that, wow, we lost McCoy to Carolina and we lost Morsell to NC State. You know, they're taking our guys. I broke it down yesterday and, you know, I don't know that these are bad things. In fact, maybe it's a double win for Virginia. They replaced those guys. God love them. They're Virginia guys and they've moved on. But we've replaced those guys with better players and other ACC schools took sort of our issues away from us. They took guys that we didn't necessarily want or need, and they're wasting scholarships on them. That's a harsh way to say it, but, let's start with McCoy. My take on that is that Hubert Davis sees in McCoy what Tony Bennett didn't see, which is that McCoy can play on the perimeter, because Tony Bennett used McCoy at 4. We all know that he started some games. He got, was relegated to the bench for quite a while and then came back towards the end of the season and got some more minutes, but he was at the 4. And the 4 in the mover blocker offense is a guy who sets the screens and then has to play off those screens, either, you know, getting the ball in the post or picking and popping. And McCoy, I've seen this written about him recently. He sees himself more as a split, as a 3 and a 4. 3 being a small forward who, you know, does most of his work outside in, you know, either dribble penetration or spot up shooting. So if that's the case, I mean, he's not a 4 at Carolina. Let's just say it that way. 4s at Carolina start at 6'10" and 240, and then they go up. That's been the rule since the Dean Smith era, since the 60s and 70s, right? And now we're in 2021. That's not changing. McCoy's 6'8", 215. That doesn't change. He's not going to grow 2 inches taller. He can gain 25 pounds, and they could be good pounds, but he's not going to be 6'10". He's not going to be a back-to-the-basket guy who's going to primarily score from the post. You know, you look at the numbers for the guys. Now, Carolina, I understand since I wrote this column yesterday, Walker Kessler has transferred to Auburn. So he's one guy out of the mix. But De'Ron Sharp looks like he's going to at least test the NBA draft waters, as is Armando Bacot. Let's assume that they're back. You know, then you got McCoy as a third wheel in that group. And if they're not back, then Carolina is in real trouble. They're going to have to go to the transfer portal and get a couple other actual bigs to replace one or both those guys. But Bacot got 73.9 of his shots at the rim last season. Sharp got 70.4% of his shots at the rim last season. Even Kessler, 68.9%. McCoy in the low 50s. I mean, that's, you know, it is what it is, but he's not a back to the basket guy. And his rim shots were a lot of dribble drives from the perimeter. So, McCoy he's when you look at his numbers then from the standpoint of can he be a three? Threes, again, they have to do their damage perimeter in, not post out, so to speak. He put up 9 threes in 214 minutes. He shot 37.3% on 2 and 3-point jumpers. He's mainly a guy that offensively, I mean, he's an energy guy. I love the guy. I wrote a column about him that Virginia should have used him more than they did down the stretch. He's a motor guy who's going to mainly contribute on offense, on offensive rebounds and transition. Basically, he's another Leaky Black. This isn't the prime recruiting target for North Carolina. He's another guy. They're adding a guy, and it's great to have guys. But when I just broke down the UVA roster for you, now that Jaden Gardner's in tow particularly, this is why McCoy left. It seems like it was either made clear or it just became clear to the young man that he was not going to be a major contributor next year. Virginia was seeking, Tony Bennett was seeking a post presence like a Jaden Gardner. You couldn't presume that you were going to get him. Gardner was coveted by lots of schools, but that Tony was going to make a priority of finding an actual back to the basket scorer to change the makeup of the team, and that McCoy, assuming like I've been assuming that Trey Murphy III is coming back, McCoy would once again be an odd man out. So good for him that he landed in a great school. I mean, North Carolina, great academic institution. It's not going to be a bad thing at all. He's going to go through life with a North Carolina degree. He's going to be a role player for that team, like he was a role player for this team. That's the bottom line on Justin McCoy. Now looking at Casey Morsell, he lands at NC State. And another interesting development here. I mean, if it's the best offer you got and you're taking the best offer you've got, great. NC State is better than a mid-major. I projected, and I still think outside looking in that the best place for Casey Morsell would be to go to a non-power five where he could maybe flourish. Instead of he's going to NC State, which went 6-2 down the stretch last year for Kevin Keats, actually played pretty well down the stretch. They only lose one guy from their rotation as of right now, at least Braxton Beverly. They had two seniors on this team. DJ Funderburk was the other. I have not seen confirmation one way or the other as to what Funderburk's going to do, but Casey Morsell doesn't factor into Funderburk in terms of minutes, but Funderburk, assuming he comes back, you have your rotation except for Braxton Beverly back. And next year, Morsell competes with in the backcourt. Now, and unlike Virginia, which plays a 3-2 alignment, three perimeter players, three guards, if you want to say, and then two post players, two forwards. NC State's more of a traditional 2-2-1, two guards, two forwards, one center. So you have two backcourt slots, 280 minutes to give for the backcourt. And you have these guys competing for it. Cam Hayes, Thomas Allen, Shaquille Moore, Garyon Sebron, and a four-star recruit, Tre'Kavion Smith, and then Morsell. That's six guys for two spots for 80 minutes. All these guys have similar numbers. Now, Tre'Kavion Smith as a prep recruit, four-star prep recruit, but still a prep recruit. But you look at the numbers. Cam Hayes, 7.8 points per game, 38% from the field, 36.4% from three. Thomas Allen, 7.4 points a game, 36.4% from the field, 37.9 from three. Shaquille Moore, 6.8 points, 44% from the field, 34.4% from three. Garyon Sebron, 5.2 points, 48.5% from the field, 25% from three. Then you throw in Morsell, 4.4 points at Virginia, 39.6 from the field, 26.3% from three. Those are five of the exact same guys. The stat profiles are uncanny. So, he's competing for minutes against a bunch of other Casey Morsells. What does this mean for Virginia fans? Casey Morsell's wearing a different uniform. That's all it really means. He's one of five guys who are trying to do the same thing, which is honestly not put up very good numbers over the course of a season as guards at NC State. Now, we also don't know about Devin Daniels. Devin Daniels, a senior this year, tore his ACL. That was what really threw State season for a loop. State, I thought, had certainly when Devin Daniels was still in the mix, they were a borderline NCAA tournament team. Daniels was a senior, just like everyone else. He can come back. He hasn't expressed his thoughts on his future one way or the other. Kevin Keats would love to have him back. So that could be another guy in the mix, and he would be your starting point. And then you'd have those other guys competing for even less minutes. He'd get 30 of those 80 minutes right off the top, at least 30 of those 80 minutes right off the top. So anyway, so breaking it all down, you know, this transfer portal stuff, you know, this is why I was cautioning. Don't get too alarmed at the beginning here. This is just what happens. And Jabri Abdur-Rahim, I should mention quickly, I didn't break this down to great degree because he didn't go to the ACC, but Jabri Abdur-Rahim committed to Georgia. He's headed to Georgia in the SEC. So, and we don't even have enough to write anything about Jabri Abdur-Rahim. He got garbage time minutes and not even many of those for Virginia this past season. We don't know anything about Jabri Abdur-Rahim. He played two games his senior season in high school. He was a top recruit. And we just wish him the best because, again, he didn't get a chance this year. We don't know if that was injury-related, just performance-related. I mean, he didn't break through the rotation this year, break into the rotation this year. So that probably says something about at least where he was as a freshman in Tony Bennett's eyes. But we'll wish him the best at Georgia and hope that he has a Johnny Juzang-like resurgence or emergence, I guess, because he can't resurge when you haven't done anything yet. When he's at Georgia, we'll root for him to do that, which is, we'll also root not to have to play him if he gets that good, if that's the case. But no, it's so the transfer portal folks were up in arms. My gosh, everybody's leaving. Well, what you got back in return is what makes this team now a top contender for the ACC. And again, in the mix to be a top five or top 10 team nationally next year. So be patient. Tony knows what he's doing. That's the bottom line as far as this goes. We are hoping now, as I finish up this particular podcast, we're hoping this week to Jerry Ratcliffe and I co-host Jerry Ratcliffe's podcast with him. Jerry works really hard to get great guests, and he's working to get some really good ones for this week. We're hoping to maybe even get one or both of Jaden Gardner and perhaps Armon Franklin, maybe, if we can get them. We'll see if that's possible and talk about them and about their process of decision and what got them to Virginia, that kind of thing. So we're hoping that's in the works, hopefully. And if you're one who kind of saves up your podcast and listens to them all at once, you know, as you're doing your yard work or something like that, if you're listening to them in sequential order, I hope I'm teasing you in the right direction here as far as that goes. Well, thanks everyone for joining us here on this podcast. Really appreciate it. Go to AugustaFreePress.com for the latest news, and thank you for joining us here on Street Knowledge. Talk to you again soon.